Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello. This is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Today I'm interviewing Claudia Lucero, author of 1 Hour Cheese. Hi, Claudia.
Hey there.
How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. Got here in the snow, but it's okay now that I'm here.
Good.
Anyway, so I want to tell people your book is a step-by-step recipe book to help even the most easily intimidated chef to make cheese quickly at home. Welcome to the show. It's a very interesting book.
Thank you. I'm glad you liked it.
So I'm wondering what happened first for you. Did you love cheese? Did you make cheese? Were you teaching others about food? What's your cheese history?
Yes. So really, it's a kitchen craft history. Mm-hmm. Cheese happens to be one of the things that I made from scratch in my kitchen, but I was, you know, pickling and making sauerkraut and all kinds of difficult things, kind of blending cocoa beans and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I hit on cheese, I just kind of knew this is something other people don't know how to make and I need to help them learn.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of how it turned into kits. And
uh-huh.
then the kits eventually turned into a book and classes.
So first you made kits to help other people make cheese, and then came the book idea?
Yes, because the supplies were actually pretty difficult to find back when I was teaching myself.
Right.
And so I thought, oh, boy, you know, it's so easy once you have everything you need. What if I help people gather everything in one little box and created a simple recipe, kind of cut out the mm-hmm. unnecessary steps that I kept finding and running into.
Yes.
And so I just simplified and simplified and simplified and then turned it into this online Etsy business, a
mm-hmm.
little shop where I first launched a goat cheese kit, a mozzarella and ricotta kit, and a paneer and queso blanco kit. And
okay.
I did that for a couple years.
Uh-huh. Now,
and along with that, I taught classes.
Uh-huh. Where did you teach?
There's a community college here called Mount Hood Community College, and then there was a really neat program in Portland called Urban Growth Bounty
mm-hmm.
that was just meeting at a middle school and at little farms and things and teaching, you know, chicken keeping, organic gardening,
mm-hmm.
And cheese making. Yeah,
what,
so those
would,
were sold out for years.
Great. Would it be a one-night course or a many?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, people could sign up to learn all the different cheeses, but they would sign up one by one.
Okay.
And, you know, we were in there for an hour and a half to 2 hours, and they would get to see these cheeses created from beginning to end, which
mm-hmm.
was just pretty mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
Not something people expected.
Right, right. So the book's history, was the book your idea? Did you convince the publisher, or did they find you?
I was super lucky in that they found me, and a book idea was sort of generating organically just from me teaching classes and answering the questions that I did with my cheese kits. But in the classes, people would come up afterwards and say, okay, you know, but where do I go from here? What
mm-hmm.
do you recommend a good book? And I did know a couple of good books, but unfortunately out of, you know, 75 to 200 recipes in the book, one or two would be for simple cheeses that they felt they could tackle at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of kept thinking, we need a true beginner's book.
Mm-hmm.
And we need a lot of photos because they were attending my classes, which were, you know, very simple cheeses, paneer and ricotta,
mm-hmm.
super easy. But I think people really enjoyed seeing the steps and seeing if the curd is right. What does whey really look like? What's normal?
Right.
And so I thought, we need a cookbook for cheese with tons of photos.
Yes.
So it was sort of developing, but mm-hmm. then I got lucky in that Workman Publishing heard about me through a couple of different places and then eventually came my way and said, hey, you know,
and
would you do if you did a book?
And they're the kind of publisher that likes this sort of stuff.
Yeah, they've been so great to work with.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I got super lucky.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did you think you would become when you were younger?
It's funny. I don't, you know, for a while I wanted to be a teacher, just like an elementary school teacher. So
okay.
I do still feel like I'm teaching,
right?
Which is great. But
you get to teach grown-ups. So
now
you get to teach grown-ups who are probably much more agreeable.
Well, I don't know about that, actually. Kids are pretty fun and agreeable up to an age, you know.
So you wanted to be a teacher. Anything else?
I danced a lot. I did modern dance and ballet, but I didn't enjoy performing, so I knew I couldn't really go on to do that kind of thing.
Okay.
But some sort of art, you know, movement, which I'm still doing. So, you know, you kind of, as you grow older, you kind of start realizing, okay, well, that interest is going to make me money, and that interest is going to be just for me.
Right.
I never, ever expected I'd be making cheese, but it does feel pretty natural for me to be making something and teaching people how to make it as well.
Now, how often do you make cheese at home for fun? Or do you have to do it so much for work that you don't do it for fun anymore?
Well, I do it for fun, thankfully. Right now I'm testing non-dairy cheeses, so that's my current passion. So there's always something that I'm testing. And then because I do demonstrations and classes and I'm doing the book tour, I'm constantly making cheese either for a photo shoot or an event or a tasting. So, yeah, 2 times a week, 3 times a week sometimes. Yeah.
How long did it take you to write the book? Once you started with Workman Press to ending?
Yeah. The proposal itself took about 6 months, and then the book itself took about a year and a half. That's because the photos were also in-house with my partner, Jeff, and so that takes a long time because you're there live making cheese, and then technology has to cooperate,
right?
You know?
I was wondering about that. I was wondering, one of my questions was, are those your hands in the photos? Is that you
they
making
are.
The cheese?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I want to tell people who haven't seen the book yet, it's like every step is photographed, right?
Yes.
Almost?
Yes.
So it is
painstaking.
Yes. Yes. So would it take many times making one cheese to get all the photos necessary for that one recipe?
For most, I was able to do it in one run. And if we redid it, it was a combination of, you know, the cheese didn't look quite as nice as it could, and the photos, we weren't super pleased with them. So I think we did 2 over again. One was the mozzarella, and I can't remember the other.
Okay.
Yeah, but we were pretty good. These cheeses are pretty forgiving. And, you know, same with photos. It may not be the most tender cheese, but for the photo, it looks great.
Different
than if I were doing it for a tasting.
Well, that's true, too, because, you know, it didn't have to taste good. It just had to look good.
Exactly.
In a class, it has to do both, right?
Little tricks, right.
So the photos were the hard part, would you say?
I would say, yeah. I thought the writing would be difficult, but turns out I have a lot to say once I get down to it. And so we had to really edit down because I, you know, had a novel on my hands in the beginning. And editing was new to me, so it had its own challenges, but I found it to be super fun and rewarding just because, you know, Megan made me sound so much better than I originally wrote. So it was really neat.
What was left out of the book? Did you leave a few recipes out or a few important parts that you wanted to put in there?
No, I think just in the introduction, I cut out a lot of, backstory that just in the end absolutely wasn't necessary. So just a lot more embellishment, you know, on my childhood and what I made with my grandma that kind of stuff. Okay. More of a life story.
Okay. The tone and the voice of the book is so homey and encouraging and so friendly. Was that your original idea, or is that your teaching voice?
Yeah, that's so funny. It's not an idea or anything that I honed. It's just how I write. That's just what comes out. And I think it is exactly how I teach classes and, you know, record videos, anything. That's mm-hmm. just my talking voice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What I found amazing is in the one of the first pages of the book, in the introduction, you stop and you insist that the person go to the store and buy some milk and make some cheese before proceeding. And I didn't do it. I hate to admit it, but I really felt like I should, and that I wanted to, that I really wanted to, and that if I had bought the book to make cheese, I certainly would have. Do you think a high percentage of your readers will stop and make that first cheese?
It does seem that way, because I get a lot of emails, people saying, I tried the first timer's cheese and thank you so much. And it does seem that that is that little jump in encouragement that they need to see that the rest is possible. And
yes.
That was my goal, is, you know, if you are skeptical, stop right now, make this really simple cheese. You're going to have a snack within half an hour. It's
yes.
going to blow your mind, and then they're going to get hooked.
It was it's a wonderful hook to get to get people to actually go do it and to get over your resistance. I mean, I thought it was a stroke of genius.
Thank you. And also to realize that, you know, you don't need to buy a bunch of special supplies and equipment.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have all this at home right now. And so how about we just try it now?
Right. With that lilt, with that, yeah, come on, it's easy. We can do this.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. Let's see what happens.
And then you can eat it. You know, this is like,
and then eat it.
Right, which is the best part.
Right. Instant gratification.
Another part that I really loved was on the wood boards, how you on the front of each chapter, she has a checklist: easy, easier, and easiest for the recipes.
Yes. Yeah, and that came about because, you know, that's, you'll often see that in cookbooks and kind of these step by step sort of books. And so my editor, I think Megan, asked me at some point, you know, we need to do some sort of level thing. And I thought, well, they're all supposed to be for beginners.
Mm-hmm.
But then once I really sat down and thought about it, I thought, okay, there is an order to these. Some are more challenging than others for, you know, whatever different reasons.
Right.
And so it was sort of a placeholder to call them easy, easier, and easiest. But then we liked it and it stuck.
Yeah. I love it because, that means the hardest is called easy.
Exactly.
And then you also have, this was another stroke of genius, you have biggest pain in the lead up of the recipe. She's got, once she quantifies it as easy, easier, or easiest, you have some, you know, what you need to have, and then one of the categories is biggest pain, where I guess you write, this is the challenge of this recipe.
Exactly. And, you know, the way that I read cookbooks and prepare myself to make something out of a cookbook is I scan it really quickly to see if it's going to ask to put the dough in the fridge for an hour or, you know, separate the egg whites and then fold them in, that kind of thing. I kind of want to get to the nitty gritty of, like, do I have it in me to make this right now?
Right. What am I going to regret later?
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to get halfway through and go, oh no, what did I get myself into?
Right.
So I just wanted to put it out on the table for people.
Yes, I think that should be mandatory for
right?
all future cookbooks starting now.
I agree.
I mean, I'm going to try to remember when I make recipes, what was the biggest pain of this recipe? Like, just so that I'm prepared next time. Because as long as you're prepared, then you can handle it.
Exactly. And then, you know, in a lot of cases, the biggest pain here was just squeezing lemon juice and straining out the seeds. So if people look and see that's the biggest pain, wow, I can totally do this then.
Right. Okay, it's time for us to take a break. We'll be back in a few minutes with Cutting the Curd and Claudia Lucero talking about one-hour cheese.
Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie? Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie? Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie just for me, girl? Please don't give none away. Let it get sweeter.
You are listening to Pumpkin Pie by the California Honey Drops.
Baby, won't you save it? Oh, won't you save it all for me?
Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hello, this is Mark Ladner from Del Posto, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, we're back on Cutting the Curd. I'm Diane Stemple, and I'm talking to Claudia Lucero about her book, 1 Hour Cheese. Hi.
Hi there.
So anyway, I have a bunch of little questions that sort of came up as I was reading the book. What do you think are people's reservations about making cheese at home?
I think they're afraid it's dangerous, that, you know, you have to bleach your kitchen, you have to use raw milk, and then you might poison yourself.
Ah, okay. So truly dangerous.
Right. What? Yeah, so with this book, I wanted to make it super clear that although, you know, making aged cheeses, you do have to control molds and you do have to keep everything squeaky clean. With these cheeses that you can make in 1 hour, it's no more dangerous than making a pot of soup, a pie, pasta, anything you would in your kitchen. You just keep it clean and you're fine.
Hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Now, what do you think is a frequent gateway cheese, not if someone didn't read your book?
Yeah, I think ricotta. Often I'll ask people, have you made cheese? And they'll say, oh, just ricotta. And so, yeah, I know that that's the one.
Okay, so they don't think that one's so scary.
No, no. Okay. At least not the crowds, you know, where I'm doing my demonstrations, say, like in a Whole Foods market or a nice cheese shop or something, maybe, where people already appreciate good food. So I'm not sure if that's true in general population.
Okay. Now, at one point in the book, you say that you don't usually recommend for the home cook or the easy home cook animal rennet. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah. There are a couple of reasons why I don't like it. One is it's highly perishable compared to the vegetarian rennet tablets that I use. And I find the tablets to be much easier for measuring. So with all of my recipes, I just say either use a quarter of a tablet or half a tablet, and the tablets are scored. You just chop them with a sharp knife, and you're ready to go after you dissolve it in a little bit of water. And then the other reason is often nowadays we all have a mix of friends, and so if you make a cheese platter and you have some vegetarians coming over, they will not want to have the cheese made with animal rennet.
Right.
And so then you make it with the vegetarian rennet, and everybody can eat it. So I just have always preferred it. And then because I used it in my kit, since it's not really perishable at room temperature, it just became what I use most frequently. And I just really know it by now and recommend it.
Are there any cheeses that you make at home that you would purposely try with animal rennet, or you prefer the taste that happens with animal rennet, or do you not see a difference at all?
You know, I don't venture into testing with it much because ultimately what I'm doing is so that I can share it with people.
Okay.
And one of the main ways that I share it is through kits. And so I just kind of feel like I don't want to paint myself into a corner using a product that I'm going to have to keep refrigerated, worry about shipping it and during summer and all that kind of stuff.
So you're kind of doing what you're doing and not wanting to mess around with something.
Yeah.
Something
in the future,
else.
Maybe I'll find that I need to, because the claim is that vegetarian rennet can give you a bitter taste with aged cheeses.
Right.
So I might end up having to do it. And that might end up being just for my own use and fun.
Okay. Now, what about, can we talk a little bit about the store-bought milk? Do you favor stores? Do you favor companies? You don't recommend raw milk.
Oh, I do recommend raw milk.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. So, you know, certain states sell it legally in stores and certain states don't, but mm-hmm. a lot of states you can buy them directly, or you can buy the raw milk directly from farmers. If you go to the farm, it's legal for them mm-hmm. to sell it there.
What's
so
it like
what
in Portland?
In Oregon.
Oh, okay. Okay. You do it, you get it at the farm?
Yes. Yeah. We have great friends. You can see them in the beginning of the book, Mike and Linda, who have great goat's milk and cow's milk. And so if I'm looking for raw milk, they are my go-tos. And then the other recommendation that I give to people is if you can't get raw or just are freaked out by the idea, which I totally understand, mm-hmm. Is the most local milk that you can find, even if it's one state over. Mm-hmm. The benefit to that is it's likely to be just plain pasteurized, not ultra-pasteurized. Mm-hmm. And ultra-pasteurization allows for cross-country travel, a long, long shelf life. But unfortunately, that high heat has killed off a lot of what we need in order to have the rennet do its job.
Mm-hmm.
So you still need your milk to be kind of alive. And the way to do that, I've noticed, is to buy it a little bit more locally.
Okay. So you would prefer local over organic?
If you can get both, that's better. And that's absolutely possible here. So I mm-hmm. hope it is in other places. And so if it's organic and ultra-pasteurized, then it just won't work for a lot of the cheeses. So that's the reason, you know, local and plain pasteurized takes precedence.
Some of the organic milks in New York seem to have dates, dates that they're going to go bad that are 6 weeks out. So that always makes me suspicious. Like, why is the date so far away?
Avoid those. Yeah. The longer the expiration date is from the day that you're buying it, that's how much more pasteurized the milk is.
Yeah, that's what it seems suspicious to me. Even though it's a good thing that it's not going to go bad, it seems like a suspicious thing also.
Exactly.
Okay, now another thing you said, well, I'm wondering about this. Was there pressure on you, since the title is 1 hour cheese, was there pressure to cut corners to make it in 1 hour? Like, I know at one point you say you can use a double boiler. It's, maybe a more careful way, but it will take more time.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. No one has asked that. No, there was no pressure because I think that that's just, I really love a challenge. And so all of the cheeses that I was already making with my kits were just naturally under an hour. I never called the cheese kits under an hour cheese kits or anything like that. But they just happened to be.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
And so I already had this idea when the publisher came my way and asked, what would you do? And I thought, oh, well, cheeses that are made quickly. And then once I started noticing, you know, how quickly they were made, it was very easy to just call them 1 hour. And this was pretty much a collection of cheeses that I already had.
Mm-hmm.
And also, rather than cut corners for the book, I think I cut corners always.
Okay.
And so what I was telling people with that information was more if you want to, you know, if you're not concerned about time and you want to do it these other slower ways.
Okay.
Like not use a microwave.
Right.
So I think using the microwave is much faster, and it doesn't affect the flavor of the cheese like it can affect flavors of different foods if you cook them in there.
Mm-hmm.
It was very natural, no pressure.
So so the cheeses wouldn't necessarily be better if you slowed down?
No, I really have done comparisons step by step with the microwave and without the microwave, and I don't detect a difference there.
Okay.
If anything, the microwave, it's very easy to get a consistent temperature in the curd, and so that might even sometimes be better.
Hmm.
And then because you are after a certain texture, so say with ricotta or with paneer, et cetera, sometimes it's important to be swift, actually. You don't want curd sitting in hot whey for too long, or else your cheese will be kind of rubbery.
Okay, okay. So it can even be a good idea.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess my microwave was broken while I was reading your book, and I was feeling kind of virtuous about having no microwave and very cranky about having no microwave. So it was like, huh, I would need a microwave to do this.
Yeah, and so I want to make clear, you absolutely don't have to, and it doesn't actually take much longer to use the hot whey method, so I would jump right in.
Uh-huh, okay. Near the end of the book, you have a section of multi-ingredient swap recipes for, for drunken fruit and fruit and nut paste and tapenade. Have you made all the permutations and combinations?
No, not all of the combinations, but so many that I trust that this formula would be just fine.
Okay.
You know, some things are, I haven't tried them, for example, just because of personal preference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't love, for example, dry peaches. I much rather use dry cherries or something, but that won't affect the formulas at all.
Okay. Do you have some favorites?
Yeah, these formulas, what was that?
Do you have some favorites?
I do, yeah. I seem to constantly go to the fig hazelnut rosemary combination for the fruit and nut paste.
Mm-hmm.
And drunken fruit, again, figs, but peaches are really awesome as well.
Mm-hmm.
And tapenade, I really like tangy, so I really do like the combination of green olives and Kalamata olives.
Uh-huh.
But artichokes are great too.
Mm-hmm.
So much of this stuff is just my favorite food.
And this is just the stuff that you serve
hard
with cheese.
Yeah.
At your classes, will you make cheese and then add some of these special additions?
Oh, yeah. The classes always include a tasting, and that's where I get to try all my homemade compotes and pestos, and they get to try, you know, whatever it is I'm coming up with at the time. So kind of fun. I haven't taught people to make those yet, but that'll be a nice addition to upcoming classes.
Right, or you could have a class and make three different things.
Yeah,
to go.
Super fun.
Yeah, yeah. Now, tell me about the vegan cheese.
Oh, yeah, so the vegan cheeses. Since I've made these cheese kits back in 2009, I promise that once a week, twice a week, I get questions on if you can use the cheese kits but replace the dairy milk with soy milk or almond milk, et cetera. And you can't, unfortunately. It's just not the same science.
It's a different, right, it would be a different recipe.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that got it into my mind that I need to start working on some. And, you know, I just got so busy with the book and a bunch of other things that I hadn't prioritized it, but it really is always in the back of my mind that I need to get these other kits out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in the last year and a half, I've been experimenting, having friends taste it, having it here at home, testing the vegan cheeses that are out there already, you know, pre-made and for sale to kind of see, you know,
what you're going
for. How bad
are
they?
Right. Well, now this is hard for me, and I think most of our listeners at Cutting the Curd are going to be shaking their heads and saying, don't tell me about...
Oh, but, yeah, exactly.
about...
Yeah, but at the same time, just like I said, that all of us have vegetarian friends.
Yes,
and,
yes,
you know, and that's
we
why
do.
We use the vegetarian rennet. The same thing goes for non-dairy friends for whatever reason, whether they're vegan or paleo or just lactose intolerant.
Right.
I want to, you know, be able to have a nice cashew kind of goat cheese on my cheese butter for those people.
You're nicer than I am, clearly.
What was that?
You're nicer than I am.
Oh. I'd be like, you can't come to my party.
I just, you know, well, once you're a cheese eater, it's very hard to comprehend people who aren't.
It's true, but sadly, some people just can't digest it.
That's
so
true. That's true.
You know.
How good
and
can
so
it
I
taste,
though? And
so I think
I'm in a good position to do it just because I'm going to be so picky. And like I said, I'm testing these cheeses out there that are for sale and just thinking, oh, God, I've got to be able to make something better than that. That tastes like plastic.
Oh, know? Good. Good. So you're going to make better ones.
Exactly.
Have you yet?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
I've got a couple pretty nailed down, so I'm pretty excited about it.
And what are you using? What's your base?
cashews, and then almond milk and almond yogurt for another one.
Okay, and I think you said that they're better if they're aged, or they're better if they're
cultured.
Yeah, like that makes them taste better.
Yeah, that's the difference, I think, between simply soaking almonds and putting them in your blender to make a ricotta, which is also handy, you know, for a non-dairy lasagna or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very bland, which ricotta, you know, it's somewhat bland.
Right.
But if you culture the almonds or the cashews a little bit, and you can culture it with all different things, anything from an acidophilus tablet to some sauerkraut juice,
mm-hmm.
anything that's sort of alive and bubbling.
Mm-hmm.
And let that eat the sugars a little bit, there's going to be a resulting tang that's mm-hmm. natural and isn't lemony, so because you would be able to detect lemon.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get more complexity.
And then the same
happens if you age for a little longer.
Then you sort of have more to work with.
Exactly.
Okay.
A little bit more cheese-like flavor, too.
Okay. And would you find that you would use additives more with the vegan cheeses?
You said,
Flavorings. Like flavoring.
Sorry, one more time?
Flavorings.
Oh, yeah.
I think like dill.
You know, if you're truly trying to fool somebody or really kind of get the naysayers to have a bite, I would say, you know, some chives and some dill aren't going to hurt.
Right.
But those are going to be things that people would add at home, and I would give variations and ideas. But as far as the kit, you know, it'll be just simply what's going to create the scientific reaction for the flavor.
Okay. Well, good luck with that. That's an admirable project. Someone's got to do it.
Yeah.
Well,
it's quite an undertaking, yeah.
I want to thank you for joining me on Cutting the Curd. It's been great to talk about your book with you.
Thanks, you too.
Okay, this is Diane Stemple saying goodbye to Claudia Lucero, whose book, 1 Hour Cheese, is an excellent, encouraging book for all home cooks. And I'm on heritageradionetwork.org, and I'll see you at the end of the month. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.